Hello, everyone. It's Dan Bossi of Old Man Dugrain. I hope you've been well. We've taken a little vacation ourselves here over the last three, 4 weeks. Part of the reason being is I left you in early July. Our last podcast, we talked about market volatility, and boy, has it been volatile. Chicago corn has traded as high as almost $6.30 a bushel December, and now it's dropped below $4.90. So as we look at the volatility in the market, it's been extreme. It's all been related to weather and geopolitics within the Black Sea. But if we had this podcast going over the last 3-4 weeks, what we all would have done is, of course, is made mistakes. And so we thought it was best from an editorial perspective to stand back, to give you maybe a little time here to enjoy summer, and then come back with the podcast full on. And we're going to be talking to a Ukrainian farmer. We're going to try to go back to Russia and talk to a very good analyst there. We're going to talk to a couple of U.S. analysts and continue to broaden this out as we get into the end of September. So we've got some very good programs lined up for you. But I thought today that I maybe would frame it. And so it's Old Man Dugrain, and that's myself, and trying to talk to you where the markets are. Because after this volatility, we do believe the grain markets are setting up for some interesting opportunities. And with that in mind, I think that we need to look forward and not backwards. It's going to be the summer of volatility when traders look backwards at 2023. And, as I talk around the industry, whether you're a farmer, a trader, or whomever, not a lot of people did very well in the volatility. And so we just tried to keep our head down at Ag Resource, I myself the same, and not make any mistakes. But I think it's getting close to where we want to start to be thinking a little more aggressively and a little differently than we have before. And we'll talk about that as we go forward. Now, the grain markets are setting up here ahead of the August crop report, which is coming out on the 11th. That's Friday. That report's going to be very important to the longer-term direction of the market. But everybody needs to understand that this is a report of farmer intentions or farmer ideas. It's not really what we would call a report of survey from NASS. That won't happen until September. And we next week in Ag Resource will be doing our annual crop tour, trying to get two key states right in the Midwest. And that's kind of been our mindset at Ag Resource. If we get Iowa and Illinois yields right on corn and soybeans, a lot of other good things happen. And so Pro Farmer will follow the week after. But if we can just survey those two areas, we'll be in good shape this year, if you will. Though I think one needs to also branch into southern Minnesota and just have an idea of what's happening there. The grain markets have really kind of diverged here, or split, if you think about where we've been at. There's the domestic market here in the U.S., which has been weather. And then we've got the world markets, which have also been interesting in their own right. I think we're going to look backwards at 2023, and maybe the big event, if you will be in India's banning of 10 million tons of non-balsamic rice. That is going to end up being a very big deal. And as you think about the Indian nation, I think as we go forward, it's going to have large impacts on agriculture. You know, a guy named Norman Borlaug back in the early 1970s, late 1960s, really introduced a green revolution to India. And India became a world exporter after the green revolution. Prior to that, it was a sizable world wheat importer, maybe taking upwards as much as 10 to 15 million metric tons of wheat. And so when we think about that footprint and how that changed agriculture at that point, I think we're maybe at that same kind of tipping point with India here today. And really being at the post of the Green Revolution. By that I'm saying India's population is now the most populous in the world, 1.4 billion people, and they're a very young, much like Africa, a very young society. And so as their caloric intake leaps forward, the Indians are having trouble right now. Rice prices have leaped sharply higher. We've got the wheat market in India at its highest price now in 6 months. And the Indian government is strongly looking at taking measures to lower duties on rice and, of course, lower duties on imports of wheat. And so this is going to be very important as we think down the road. And I really believe as we look at the GrainCom conference being held in May of 2024 in Geneva, Switzerland next year, I think really their focus in thinking about the changing landscape of the world grain markets relative to Africa and India should be the headline hopefully they'll have a great conference. I know I'll put my two bits in on it, but I think it's going to be very important in terms of looking at the structural changes that are going on in India and its world grain demand and what it means to world agriculture. We're in a state right now where Europe is out of arable land. We're about the same in the United States, Australia, Canada may have a little left, but really the large future growth has got to come from South America. And, you know, traders really became optimistic because of Brazil's record large corn and soybean crop yields this year. But I'm really doubtful that that will persist. We've got El Nino coming on very strongly. The correlative studies on El Nino and what it means for Brazilian agriculture are, number one, it's been exceptionally dry across much of northern and central Brazil in the last 3 to 4 months. And the heat is now building. So if you think about planting season, which starts on September 15th in Brazil, it's probably going to be delayed. And so if you delay that planting season by 3 to 5 weeks, that has a big impact on Safrina corn. And so if the world doesn't have the second corn crop, Safrina in Portuguese means little corn crop. We know it's not little anymore. If that's indeed the case, it has big ramifications down the road. And so Brazil looms large, but it's going to be probably rare in this new climate environment where Brazil and the United States are able to produce record crops back to back. So when you do get a record crop hemispherically, either in the United States or Brazil, it does pressure prices temporarily. But our work really shows that the world is still looking at a super cycle in commodities. By that, we're saying whether it's copper, maybe the metals, industrial metals, the grains, or even the meats. And meats are maybe the most bullish as we look forward to 2024. There is still tremendous upside pressures. And the U.S. Central and World Banks have been using the hammer of rising rates and trying to push down demand. Really, that's the wrong hammer. The hammer they needed was one of more supply. And so if you think about the additionality that was needed in supply, the central banks couldn't do that. And now that capital rates are higher, somewhat restrictive for borrowing money, I would imagine anyway, if we go forward, that the ability to bring on supply around the world, whether it be a copper mine or maybe additional land down in South America or anywhere even in the Black Sea, is going to be very difficult. So that means that grain and energy and metal markets are going to stay well supported. Demand is going to be coming back. Chinese demand is soft today, but we believe they'll be taking monetary and fiscal measures that will improve that demand. And so when that does come back, you're going to be seeing shortages again. And this is going to be the real reason why the U.S. and world central bank will have difficulty getting inflation for any lasting period of time under maybe 3%. So if you think about world interest rates or U.S. interest rates, it is higher for longer. We believe that the cycle of 0% or low interest rates has passed. When we look at wage inflation and we look at the pressures that it will be producing, along with this shortage of commodities, we think we're moving back into a different lending environment than we've seen. And when I look backwards for 5,000 years, there's only been 37 years that there's been, let's say, negative or 0% interest rates. It's something that doesn't last very long. And so when you think about the future, it is not that. We're going back to now where you know, lending rates will be somewhere in the 3 to 7%, at least for the Fed funds rate in the United States. And that's a much different landscape. The new asset class is now cash. And when you think of that impact and what that means for investing and getting more supply for commodities, it's going to be very challenging. And so that is the big issue going forward. I don't want to say too much about climate change. Again, I think it's a politically charged discussion. My own view is that you know, we've got weather data that goes back to about 1880 with any kind of certainty. And so when we think about it, we've got 140 some years of weather data balanced against billions of years where God has been in control of this planet. And I don't think we know whether it's man or God that's really controlling climate at this point. So all we can say is that climate's changing. There's more variability. It is warming. We did see some record temperatures globally during the month of July. Whether or not that persists and what it means for global crop production going forward is a little uncertain. But the one thing that I see in our research is that when I look at per capita grain yields across the two hemispheres, we are now starting to stagnate. That means we need additional acres going forwards. And that's really the challenge for South American and Black Sea farmers going forward, is Can we bring 22 to 24 million extra acres into production over the next 5 to 7 years that will satisfy the growing population and, of course, rising demographics? And so that is the big challenge of agriculture. I have faith in technology, but from a longer-term perspective, this is why at Ag Resource, we do not believe that corn's heading back below $4 a bushel. We do not believe that soybeans are heading back below 10 or wheat black below 5. These are markets that need to stay elevated such that we get those extra acres coming into production. And I have world farmers anyway, treating each crop like it's their firstborn son or daughter going forward. So getting back to the USDA crop report, and what we really think here is that we're not sure at Ag Resource if it's really the August crop report or the September crop report, but either after those one crop reports, we'll have a very good handle of what U.S. corn and soybean yields will be. Today, the industry has wide expectations for U.S. corn and soy yields. So we can find soybean yields near 50 bushels an acre. Well, I also see some others talking as high as 52 and a half or 53. And then on corn yields, I see estimates as high as 184 or 168. So we've got a large skew of ideas on yield. And until those yields crystallize into a tradable USDA estimate, that's probably the September crop report, I think it's difficult to have a longer term vision. Now, as I stand back and think about where yield will be, and we are heading out to the fields, as I said, next week, we are still envisioning a corn yield maybe between 175 and 171 bushels an acre. Kind of in the middle is 173, and that's what we're looking at on soybeans. Maybe 51 bushels an acre pretty much catches us. And so with those kind of yields, there is opportunity longer term. And the market, once it sees that yields, or at least has faith in a crop yield, is that we'll start looking at the world market and kind of forget about the domestic market. Now, it's important for me to reflect back upon that the global grain demand, at least trade, is something that we can measure very accurately in the world market, is really relatively strong. We had a record yield last year, a record trade last year in wheat. We're going to have a record trade this year in soybeans. Corn is down because we traded so much wheat from Australia into Southeast Asia, principally China. But it's that record demand that I think is being missed by Chicago. Brazilian farmers understand it very well. As I talk to them down there, they understand that they saw soybeans heading out the door in record proportions. And now that winter corn crop is doing the same thing in Brazil. The question is, will they have a record large corn or soybean crop in the year ahead to follow up? My tennis elbow says probably not. And that's what really gives the potential. I'm sitting here looking at a longer term, we believe longer term bull market. And if I see value in the market, it would really be looking at December of 24 corn futures near or below $5. I think there's great value there. And looking at soybean futures, if we got down to 11 and a half or $11 on November of next year, I think that were the opportunity. I'm actually more bullish of wheat and corn in the longer term perspective than soybeans. I only say that because I believe that renewable diesel will cause soybean acreage to be up next year. The current ratios on corn and soybeans are now tilted in favor of soybeans being more profitable. So I would imagine that farmers next year will plant at least 3 to 3.5 million extra acres of soybeans in 2024. And that means that corn acres will probably come down closer to 90 or 91 million acres. With those kind of acres and then using what I would say a yield of around 180 bushels an acre would give you that U.S. corn's end stock profile that will be declining. On top of that, if you haven't been noticing what's going on in India in terms of rice and wheat prices, is China. And if you look at corn prices within China, they have been rising and now sitting relative to Dalian futures in that $9.70 to $9.80 per bushel. So when the Chinese are looking at the import opportunities and profitability from taking corn from Brazil or even the Gulf and bringing it into China, it's some of the best levels we have seen in the last 2 years. So we believe that China will take 24 million metric tons of corn this year. That is up. Of course, the Chinese crops have endured excessive heat. some flooding, some drought. It's been a real mixture of weather opportunities across much of China. And so we're thinking anyway that the Chinese crops, although the Chinese government may report records, we're kind of doubtful about that, at least for the numerous crop cycles that they've been looking at. So when you stand back from everything, I've got record low stocks to use ratios in wheat. I've got an extremely record, very low stocks to use ratio in corn. A lot of that will depend on the final size of the U.S. corn crop. Soybeans, maybe not as much, but the other side of that is China will be importing probably 105 million metric tons of soybeans this year. And we're going to deviate a little bit from USDA. We think that number will be 109 to 110 million metric tons in the 23-24 crop year. So in the background of all of this is relatively strong world markets, a profitability measure for imports of things like wheat into India, soybeans into China, corn into China, corn into, of course, from the Ukraine into the EU. And so the mixture, if you will, assuming that the war is ongoing across Ukraine and Russia, is really, really quite positive. Let me just light upon a little bit of what's happening in the Black Sea, because I do think it is so important. As you look at the export from Ukraine, again, I do believe that the primary path of export will be down the Danube River or across the border into Romania. Costanza, if you will, the key port there, will have to see more exports, but it will be competing against EU farmers. And so the big loser in all of this and the closure of the export ports of Ukraine will be the Ukrainian farmer. Although the EU can talk about the subsidizing the movement of corn and wheat and other products, sun products from Ukraine, getting all the EU members on a non-budgetary issue to agree is next to impossible. So I do not believe that the EU will subsidize that logistics once the grain hits the European border. And with that in mind, I do believe that those extra costs are going to be hitting hard at the Ukrainian farmer. Today, the average price of diesel fuel within Ukraine is $34 a gallon. So that margin is already high, and it will take over $3 a bushel just to get it to the border with the European community. So the profitability measures for the farmer in Ukraine are going to be quite compressed. In all of our measurements, it's going to be negative. And so I really worry about the Ukrainian farmer and what his viability, financial viability, will be longer term. And if the war is ongoing, I believe next year, the Ukrainian farmer will be planting a crop that is probably only half of where we should be or half of where we were back in 2021. This all, again, constricts the availability of grain in the world market. And then if you look at Russia, Ukraine is promising that if it can't export grain, neither will Russia. And its marine drones will take targets on Russian vessels or Russian port facilities. And so as this back and forth, tit for tat, if you will, in terms of Russia striking Ukrainian grain infrastructure, trying to close down the Danube, the Ukraine will lash out and do the same thing on Russia. Just closing the Azov Bridge, which is a narrow strip of water with a draft only 27 to 30 feet there where vessels pass underneath the bridge. Just taking it down would block some 35% of Russian wheat trade to the world. So this all becomes very complex, geopolitically speaking. And so as I think about the wheat market, it's in a much, much different place than where we were last year. In fact, a year ago, Russia and Ukraine were exporting record tonnages. It was a race almost every week to get and secure that business. That's why Russian wheat prices declined almost every week from when the grain pact was signed in the middle of July up until it ended this July. And with that in mind, we're in a spot now today where world wheat prices will likely be rising every week. And so that has a much different impact on corn and a much different impact on the oilseed markets, principally sun oil. And so, again, the world wheat market has bottomed. We're now heading higher. And as the struggles of exporting out of the Black Sea worsen, we believe, heading into the winter, people are going to have to turn to other venues for supply. And this then takes us to the Southern Hemisphere. Argentina is already suffering through drought. That really hasn't changed. There's been a little rain in places like Cordoba, maybe up to Santa Fe, but much more is needed. So if we don't get a spring time frame of a return to normal weather, if El Nino produces problems for Australia, the wheat market's going to get very spicy very quickly as we get the calendar past the middle of September. So I think there's going to be some very big opportunities coming in wheat. Again, a seasonal and annual price low has established itself early in the crop year, probably in June. And we now have a much different risk profile for traders and producers going forward. And I'm not anxious to sell wheat on breaks. I believe that that's where end users should be making purchases. And if you think about the world wheat market going forward, it is the Black Sea, and that 30% of supply that comes out of there, 29% to be exact, that'll be so important to valuations going forward. Let me also maybe light upon this El Nino development, because world global temperatures should be in the 2024 year rising. How strongly El Nino comes on will be very key. But again, with ocean temperatures already record high, the movement of these of this warmth, if you will be very, very key across the globe. And so I worry a little bit about Brazil this year, not so much Argentina in terms of its opportunity for yield gains and production gains, but I'm not willing to say that we're just going to have the kind of growing season that one can lay down and not pay acute attention to what's going on to either Brazil or Argentina. As you think forward, I guess our mindset is really coming to this, which is once we get past the either August or September report and we define to some degree of certainty U.S. corn and soybean yields, we should be in that spot of where the world markets come into play. Exporters start to understand that Brazil has exported its record large soybean crop. Its corn crop will still be cheap, but I think that Brazilian farmers will want higher prices than the cheapness that they sold their soybean crop is. And then we've got the financial problems in Argentina, where inflation is running at 100 to 110 or 114% last month. We've got the geopolitical issues of war in the Black Sea. And then U.S. farmers will probably store as much of their corn crop as they principally can, giving us a strong basis advances. And then future spreads should probably narrow in. So as I look at the opportunities, they will be broad. And maybe the first place that we should start to watch will be, of course, the basis levels as we start the early harvest across the southern Midwest in September. And we start to get yield data, but better start to understand what farm marketing patterns will be. I do not find U.S. farmers anxious to sell corn. They may be more anxious to sell soybeans, but even there, they're going to be reluctant. And so there's going to be a real pull because of crush margins, both from the ethanol grind and from the U.S. soy processor, that will give us some real strength in cash markets as we think forward to the middle or latter part of harvest. Thereafter, if we have any kind of weather problem in South America, which I think is going to happen in that September to maybe middle October or end of October timeframe, when Brazilian farmers in Mato Grosso, Goiás, and Mato Grosso do Sul will struggle to get early seed in the ground, that will be important, and then set up what probably will be a smaller safrinha crop. So as I tried to highlight you, we've got a developing bull market coming in corn. Once we define how big is big on the U.S. corn crop, and a little bit same applying to soybeans, the wheat market's already forged its bottom. And let me tell you, the yield data that's coming out of Canada, they, of course, endured a very bad drought over the last 3 months. Their yields are coming in far below expectations, and we're now becoming comfortable with a 28 or 29 million metric ton Canadian wheat crop, a canola crop probably under 17 million tons, an oat crop that's been badly damaged, and adding it all together, Canada's probably going to be importing 6 million tons or so of U.S. corn. So there will be a demand pull coming from the north, from Canada, and we will not see the wheat imports into the United States, which will be bullish, if you will, of Chicago, in particular a Durham wheat crop that's only 4.1 or 4.3 million metric tons in Canada, will be really quite positive for the world Durham market. So I wanted to come to you on this podcast and at least discuss this changeover of market discovery, price discovery, from the domestic market. Now that's going to the world market. and how this all going to happen as world biofuel demand and U.S. biofuel demand is really kicking into a higher degree. Most bullish, of course, as we went into this podcast, was going to be soybean oil. We highlighted that back in April and May. That's come to bear. We are still bullish of soybean oil. And I think when we think about broadly, we're going to be finding these grain markets are at a much different demand kind of pull once we define U.S. crops. So we'll get back to the normal routine. We'll get back to where maybe in the next podcast, we'll have three or four other analysts ahead and we'll dissect the August crop report and maybe have some visions from the field from Jim Quinton as we're doing our crop tour. That will be ongoing next week. But I wanted to spend at least these 20, 25 minutes here discussing the landscape of U.S. grains and world grains and why we are becoming more bullish as we've got through the summer of volatility without too many skins on our knees or elbows in terms of trading losses and trying now to better understand the world as it comes. So again, as we look at it, the world commodity market super cycle is still there. I don't think that's changed. Central bank rate increases have pressured us, but we're now in this environment where rates are taking their foot off the gas on rate increases. We're going to see the dollar decline longer term as the U.S. government will likely shut down at the end of September and maybe shut down for several months. This makes that September crop report even more important, but the political polarization within Washington is probably as bad as I've ever seen it. So I'm not looking for a farm bill this year. I believe that the government will shut down because they won't be able to agree on a budget. And this is not going to play well for the U.S. greenback. And so as we sit, again, looking at a dropping U.S. dollar, stability in rates, a weather uncertainty, crops that are defined in the northern hemisphere to some degree, a geopolitical war that's worsening in the Black Sea because of now war being taken to the Black Sea with marine drones and port strikes, I think this gives us markets that will be much more vigorous to the upside. And I think the U.S. will become the reliable supplier of choice along with Brazil, depending upon which hemisphere you're looking at in terms of exports. We'll be back normally next week at Old Men Do Grain. Thank you for spending this 20 minutes with me to discuss the world grain markets. I believe standing back from it all, we're really in a position that as we come out of these reports, either in August or September, we're going to have a much different landscape and a much different feel as money managers want to push investment into the Chicago Board of Trade and the Paris market, and maybe even into other futures exchanges around the world. Dan Bossi from Old Man Do Grain, I hope you stay well. We'll be in the fields next week and coming to you with a podcast from there, but I hope you stay well and that the August USDA crop report is one of good fortune for all of you. Until next time, goodbye.